Well, welcome to Yada Yada Radio and to our Torah study this evening. What do you think you have to do, fellows in heaven, to get a voice like that? Do you think there's somebody's line you've got to nudge your way to the front of, somebody to bribe? And how would you get a voice like that?
Well, I'd have to go back in time.
Could you sing like that one time?
I could do better than that, probably.
Oh, my, would I love to be able to sing like that. I would assume that we will be able to sing on key in the big upstairs.
I think that's probably true. I was never a big Andy Williams fan myself, but, that's just me, though.
You know, I like the tone of his voice, I guess. I would not be a fan, but I certainly enjoy the way he sings that song. I'll tell you that for sure. Today, Larry, we closed out the show having an interesting discussion with Nick, who, you know, know the relationship with Nick, he called about 2 years ago into Shattering Mess, one of the very first shows, and he was defending Islam and trying to explain that Muhammad wasn't a pedophile just because he was 50 years old and having sex with a six-year-old girl. And he was doing it because his, I don't know if it's his sister or his, I think it's his sister, married a Muslim man. He wasn't a Muslim.
Get along.
Yeah, he wasn't a Muslim, but he really needed to understand what was going on there. And so I would talk about the subject of Islam Smith, how he called it. And over time, he went from being a kind of an Islamic advocate to saying, all right, I'm not going to play the role of Islamic advocate anymore. And he then presented himself as a spiritualist. And he comes, I think, out of a culture of
Gnostics?
Of Eastern spiritualism. No, it's actually, he's a very thoughtful guy. I really like him. Okay. I think he's a really thoughtful, interesting guy. But
obviously he's listened to you and put some thought into it because he's given serious consideration.
I think
he's beginning to figure out he's been involved in some hogwash. But okay.
Yeah. He was, and he sent me a bunch of emails that wanted me to consider reincarnation. I evaluated the sites that he sent and gave him some explanations as to how that could happen. That was the thing that really bothered him, is that the cultures he came out of, and I didn't know how big a deal reincarnation was outside of the Indian religion, but Hindu religion, but it's a really big deal. And places like Turkey, for example, huge reincarnation. And so we walked through all of that, and we did that privately, really, in emails. And, you know, he's come to the point now where he clearly knows that Yah was God. And he knows that Torah is inspired.
I'm catching that. I was catching that today.
Yeah. He knows that, and he knows that the covenant offer is out there. He knows what it entails. And you know, today he had his one issue, and the reason I brought it up is just two reasons. The first is that I really learned something today by his question. And I had always realized that the benefit of heaven is what we're doing here. We're having a discussion both in the chat room and on the telephone, online here, as part of this program, and we can come at things, same Yahweh, same covenant, same Torah, same family, same affection, but we don't have to agree on everything. In fact, it's kind of more interesting when we all have little different perspectives. I expect there's going to be a lot of that in heaven. He was talking about, he said, wouldn't it be boring if all day, every day, 24 hours a day, all we're doing is listening to Yahweh? And of course, since he's the creator of the universe, I could probably listen to him 24/7 and be just fine.
It doesn't sound boring to me.
Yeah, I know, and be just fine with that. But in realistically, that's not his intent. That would bore him to death. He's not interested in that. He's interested in our feedback, in our perspective, and each of us being unique and bringing something unique to the family. And so he's going to want us to do, you know, for example, the give and take he had with Abraham. You know, how many do there really have to be down there before you're going to save them? Did Abraham change his mind? No. But was it an interesting discussion? Yes. I think God had fun with it. I think he wants us to discuss things with him, debate things with him. And I think amongst one another, that has always been the appeal of Heaven to Me Too, is that we can go out as groups and explore together. I've always found that if I see a really pretty sunset or a really pretty ocean or, you know, a really pretty view, and if I can enjoy it by myself, but if somebody to share it with, it's so much more rewarding.
Hey, you sound like my wife.
Yeah, well, I probably don't have good legs, but see.
No, I'm sure you don't, but that's not the issue here.
Okay.
I think there's about a million things beyond all that. Who knows what? You know, I don't know what, but I know one thing. After we go through whatever we go through in our personal experiences, you know, darting through the universe and
yes,
feeling different and looking different and feeling like a million bucks and all that.
Yeah.
It's going to be nice to sit down by a campfire and laugh with a couple of people about how stupid you were here and there.
Absolutely.
You know?
But, you know, the whole thing of getting different people's perspectives and sharing it together, I expect that we actually are going to have still different personalities, different perspectives, and different reactions. And I think...
Well, you're certainly going to have that. He's not making automatons. I mean,
no.
If he wanted automatons, that's what he would have gotten. You know?
Correct.
Obviously, that's not the case.
Yeah. It'd be horribly boring for him if we didn't go through eternity with different perspectives and different reactions and coming to different conclusions. I think there's a bright line. We're not going to say, okay, you know, I really want to argue this point about you being God. I think I'm God, and I'd like you to hear my argument as to why I'm God, not you. You know, we're not going to do that kind of stuff. I mean, because that would
No, I don't. I think to be trusted, part of what's happening here is
yes,
to be trusted with the kind of power you're going to have. You can't be the kind of person that would do that.
No. It would have no interest. You'd have no desire to do that. But you might want to challenge God on something. You might go up and say, "Listen, you know, I love the platypus. That's a great design. But come on, the camel. I mean, that thing is so ugly and so ornery. What were you thinking about?" You know, and he might come back and say, "Yeah, but you know, I gave him to the Muslims. So, you know, what's your beef? You know." I thought they deserved each other. It seemed to me to be funny. I think that we are going to be able to have different perspectives. I think we're going to be able to continue to use sarcasm and have some fun with it. I don't think it's going to be a place of all politeness and all agreement.
I hope there's sarcasm or else I'm going to be in trouble.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. All of us. The second thing is... That once that issue was resolved, then his next issue was he obviously works on Saturdays, and he's trying to I'm okay with the one day a week that I devote to Yahweh, but could it be my choice? And I said no, you know, it really can't be your choice. But all right, I went out on a limb here with him, and I'm going to go out on a limb here on the program, and I want you guys to respond to this. Then we'll get into the 119th Psalm. If I knew that my family was dependent upon me working on Saturdays, and that I was going to I could give Friday evening and Saturday morning and Saturday afternoon, but sometime on Saturday I was going to have to do my regular job, and that was my present reality. If I were in that position and I was excluded from the covenant, and I know what the covenant entails, personally, I would choose to engage in the covenant and realize that until such time as I could work my way out of Saturday work, that I was going to be in violation of that aspect of Yahweh's instructions. I would feel bad about it, but I prefer to feel bad about it inside the family than outside the family. And that was really the approach that I wanted to take with him, is that I can't advise you to work on the Shabbat, but I think I would rather be in a position where inside of the covenant I'm forgiven for my goofs than I would be for the things that I'm doing that are inappropriate, than I would be on the outside with no forgiveness for it. Now, is that... How far out on a limb do you think I am with that?
Well, I don't know, man. I think you just got me confused over here. Is that a yes or a no?
I would feel bad about working on the Shabbat. I would work out ways to get out of work on the Shabbat, but I wouldn't let it keep me out of the covenant. I'd engage in the covenant, and I'd get forgiveness for what I was doing that was inappropriate.
I was in that exact position when I first came to know Yahweh. I had a job where I had to work on the Sabbath. There was no option. I would have been fired if I didn't, and I had a wife I needed to take care of, and I did it. I felt bad, but, you know, I did it. But I didn't just drop my relationship with Yah. I continued to pursue that.
Yeah, that's my view, too. And since the guy we're studying here on how to observe the Torah, I did a lot of stuff that I'm sure he felt bad about, and worked his way through. My view is that that is the right call, is to say, become part of the covenant and over time resolve that issue.
Well, I think that is the case, because that's what happened with me. I had to work half a day every other Shabbat, and I did it, you know, but it was a set apart day still for me.
Yeah. So we're all in the same, by the way, when we're talking like this, we're not claiming that we're speaking for God. We're members of his family. We're just sharing with the family what we would do and what we would recommend in that situation. It sounds like all three of us would say, work it out over time, but become part of the family and then work it out over time.
I think people have a lot of big talk is what I think sometimes, and they don't, you know, I don't believe that Yahweh requires a lot of us. I really don't. I think that he requires that we know him. That's about what he requires. I mean,
I know that he does not want us to diminish the importance of the Shabbat. And we shouldn't talk about glibly neglecting the Shabbat. But if we teach the value of the Shabbat, if we encourage people to observe the Shabbat, if we make our attempt to observe the Shabbat, I think encouraging someone, yeah, I think I'd become part of the family and then work it out over time.
Yeah, well, I don't think that he says not to treat the day with contempt. I mean, you're not going to be contemptible about it. But I think that people have a tendency to say, well, I wouldn't do this and I wouldn't do that. I'll tell you, you know, I was a national sales manager for a very large golf scoreboard company. I think I'm the only guy that didn't play golf. And they brought their preacher in, and their pastor, as they called him, and he said, we're all going to pray. And I said, the hell with that. I'm not going to pray with you. And, you know, a couple weeks later, they fired me. You know,
wow.
Big deal.
Wow.
That was my thought about it. I'll be taken care of. I'm not going to stand here.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, too. And in that particular circumstance, you made the right choice. What they did is illegal.
I made a good call.
But it's a good call. Yeah, I would.
Didn't say they fired me for that, of course.
Of course.
Didn't matter.
Let me give you the counter to the position I just shared. You guys, most of you know the name Yoel because he has been responsible for building all of the websites, which, you know, of course, we're having issues with right now, but he's working to resolve those. Yoel, when he first came to Yahweh, we had just lost the business that we had put our heart and soul into, and his shares went from being very valuable to nothing. And he ended up with, because of the way the tax works, with a huge tax liability without the income from the gain. He was in really a very difficult position. And he loved where we were living. It was great for his family and for his kids, but there was no employer. And he just did odd jobs. But he had this, once he became part of the family, man, the Shabbat and the set-apart days, they were special. And he would tell everybody, he says, listen, if you're going to, right up front, I am from Friday evening at sundown to Saturday evening at sundown, don't call me. I don't care how big of an emergency it is. I'm not going to do my ordinary job. And he was absolute resolute about it. Nice, but resolute about it. And he was broke. You know, right now he's paid off the mortgage on one home, owns another home with a renter and positive cash flow, and has four or five jobs. One of them is with Dell Computers, you know, it's just like, yeah, there was a lot of months where he didn't have the money to make the house payment. And yet he said, you know, I am certain that if I do what he asked, it's all going to work out. Now, that's the other side of it.
Well, that is the side of it. And by the way, that's how I felt about it, and that's the way it worked out, you know. And
yeah.
So it is what it is. And, I mean, I don't know if that golf board company's still there, but I am here,
yeah.
And I'm fine.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I do think there's both are probably right. The key aspect of all this, too, and that's what we're finding out from Dode, is that this is not laws to be obeyed. This is not a God to be feared. This is the Father providing instruction, and we are always better off if we follow our Father's instruction. But our Father is not going to disown us because we slip up from time to time.
And the religious notion of a God who's just sitting there waiting for you to mess up, just looking for a reason to kick you out.
No. You know, if that were the case, I want to tell you, he would have picked people other than Abraham, Moshe, and Dode.
And Noah.
I mean, Noah, yeah, but particularly Dode. I mean, if he was looking for somebody that says, you know, I'm a real student here. I'm going to make certain that whatever you say, I'm going to do. First of all, I think he'd be bored. But second of all, he would not have engaged with the cast of characters he chose. You know, look at Hosea. I mean, he asked Hosea, for crying out loud, to go marry a temple prostitute.
Yeah, he would have went and got some religious guy, some regimented religious guy.
I know all the rules, and I'm going to follow all the rules because I find pleasure following the rules. I know I don't find pleasure following rules. I'm opposed to authority.
He would have went and got Pharisees to follow him.
Yeah, that's right, because they love following the rules. So I think it's take a deep breath and
relax. No, I think they love giving the rules. I don't know that they love following rules. According to Yahweh, they didn't. They give, you know, people a ton of bricks to carry, but they wouldn't carry a straw. So, you know, that's the way that works.
Impressions and inward. It's like the Pope. You know, they dress up all pretty on the outside.
Yeah.
And I don't think they look pretty, but they do. And on the inside, of course, it's just pure poison. This is the passage that we ended our program last week. It was, choose to have your genuine, your unfolding, your compassionate mercy come to me. Rakambo. And elect to restore me and keep me alive. Indeed, your Torah is my greatest joy. There are just three thoughts there. Three very simple thoughts. Thought number one is, I want to receive your mercy. Now, you don't ask for mercy if you're perfect. If you're if you are the top dog, you know, let's say you win the race, you end in the number one position, you win. Why would you need mercy? You perform flawlessly. Why would you need mercy? So this is the first aspect of this is, here is the top dog in God's pound. He's the number one guy, king of the hill. And he's saying, I want you to want to, I want you to desire giving me mercy. I need mercy. I need undeserved kindness. So that is an admission that he was not vindicated, he was not righteous because of who he was and what he was doing. He was righteous because God chose to be merciful. That's the key aspect of the first part of it. The second part is God's mercy is what provides our restoration. You know, we all have temporal life. We all have free will. We all have a conscience whereby we can evaluate things and make rational decisions. But that's it. From the rest of it, we need him if we're going to transcend this. And what he's saying is that Yah's mercy is going to restore his life. Now, the problem with that for anyone outside of the Torah family is that he's saying that indeed this is because he loves the Torah. And so that means that mercy comes from the Torah, life comes from the Torah. Christianity is wrong. Paul's wrong. It's just my thoughts.
I say that, man.
Yeah. Mercy, restoration to eternal life, Torah is joyous. It's very succinct presentation of the purpose of the Torah. We should look at the Torah as a source of great joy, and it is the source of divine mercy. It is the source of eternal life and restoration. And you know, those are all happy, delightful, loving things. And what I think what we were really talking about at the end of our program a week ago is that when you reach the point where the Torah is fun, when you're studying Yah's word and that's the highlight of your day, then you know you're in the right place in the relationship. That's where Dode was.
Yeah, and to me, I'm going to be honest with you, sometimes that's hard. It's not hard when I connect, but it's hard when I don't get anything out of it. Do you understand? I mean...
Yeah, I would tell you that there are times when I'm writing, doing the research, where I'm not getting anything out of it. And it typically will only go maybe an hour or so. Like if I'm... I'll give you a great example for me. I was doing Daniel 7. There's very little teaching in Daniel 7. It's a prophetic timeline, but there's no teaching. The part that turns me on is the teaching. No teaching.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sitting here, okay. You know,
That's kind of the opposite of most people, you know. Most people are into the prophetic timeline and not the
teaching. Oh, yeah. No,
most people want to know everything about prophecy and nothing about Yah at all.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah. I'm only doing the prophecy because I think that it is something that so many people are interested in, that if we have some more prophecy, it'll draw more people into the site.
And you're right, it will. It will.
Yeah, but it's true. That's an interesting observation. I'm really not all that interested in the who and the why and the where and the when. I'm writing about it, but it doesn't turn me on. And I find it unfulfilling. So that's an example of that. And then I would start, and I devoted 2 weeks to Roman history. I wrote 120 pages of Roman history. And in the midst of the Roman history, there's a lot of times they say, what am I doing here? I mean, this is just really not fulfilling. But every day, at least twice a day, I would come up against something in Roman history that tied into the statement that Yahweh made that says, now I get it. That's why you made this statement. You really wanted us to look at Roman history. And if we take this timeline of Roman history and actually look at what they did, this whole picture of from Babylon to Persia to Greece to Rome to the church is just all one entity. And I ended up finding, yeah, there was great insights that, you know, I'm looking forward to share it when it's ready to be published. But, yeah, there were periods of time when it was not uplifting. You know, I happen to be in a part right now. It's in Daniel 8, a bit filled with teaching.
Yeah, well, no, I mean, don't get me wrong. I always love to learn. I'm saying there's times I find myself flat. You know, that's what I'm saying. But, you know, yeah, I mean, if you get to a point where it's always joyous to learn, you know, I mean, it's pretty obvious to me when Hezekiah, you know, was a couple weeks late, or as low he were, getting Pesach together. You know, they went out there and they learned a lot.
They did.
That's what happened there. That's why everybody was so happy.
That's correct.
You know, they were joyous.
And they were learning a lot.
That's
yeah.
why.
Yeah. Now, I Larry, one of the just thought about your swing there is that there isn't any real human being that's always up. It's just not normal. I don't expect to find God always with an ear to ear smile. I mean, it's not realistic. All of us have probably come across somebody that just seemed to be always smiling, always had something nice to say, always chipper. And after a while, you say, "Gosh."
There's a couple of women that are cashiers in different stores I go in, and they're insane.
Yeah.
You know, they're old ladies with these big smiles. And how are you today? You know, and it's just this 24-hour smile. I mean, at some point.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not.
It's got to get a little wearing, you know.
Yeah, I know that it's not manly to be like that, and I don't think God wants us to be what we aren't. And I have never seen it in women where it is appealing, because after a while it just gets to be irritating. It's too much. So I think what you're experiencing is just the normal emotional spectrum. All right, here's the 78. May the arrogant and haughty, the insolent and presumptuous, those who are self-willed, self-absorbed, and self-motivated, talking about religious, political, military, economic leaders, be ashamed, be humiliated, recognizing that what they have done is wrong, because their deceptions twist and pervert what I've shared. I myself continually meditate and I think about your precepts, those instructions that you have entrusted, which enable us to respond appropriately to you. Now, this is a Larry passage, obviously. This is a statement where Dode is saying that those who are confronting him are haughty, they're insolent, they're presumptuous, they're self-absorbed, they're self-motivated. All true. That's the nature of religious individuals. They got a religion to sell, and even if you are not a paid cleric, you've got to sell your religion to keep your faith. You know, if you can't sell your religion, it chips away at your faith. And he's saying that he wants them to be ashamed. He wants them to be embarrassed. Now, that's not a concept most people would attribute to God, that he wants to embarrass people, that he wants to humiliate them.
No.
But this is this is in Dode's voice. He's inspired by Yahweh.
Yeah, well, no. I'm not saying that there aren't people that are going to be embarrassed and humiliated. He says that very clearly in his words.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, there are certain people that are going to get just that. Yeah.
So here is when... both of us receive lots of letters saying that we're Mr. Meanie, and that it's not nice to humiliate somebody. And,
right.
And you know, given the option of not humiliating somebody and still making the point, I'd prefer to do so. But still, when somebody is citing a religious position that is, we know is wrong, and we cite Yahweh's testimony to counter it, and if they continue to cite it, my normal reaction is I want to humiliate them. At that point, I want to.
Look, I posted it was, I believe it was Jossie had put the two verses side by side, one from Matanyah where he's saying, you know, call no man father, but there's, you know, there's only one father. And then over in Corinthians, you got Paul saying, I've become your father through the Messiah, so imitate me. Well, here was a guy pushing there's nothing in the NT, as he called it, that goes against the Torah. I said, well, all Paul's letters do. You know. And so finally I threw that one up. And this brilliant man in his response said, haven't you ever called anybody like your dad father?
Yeah. It's like the example of the trees, the good tree and bad tree and good fruit and bad fruit. And he's not talking about trees.
Interestingly, you were on Shattering Myths talking about that. I said, why don't you just take Yahusha's position? If there's bad fruit, it's a bad tree.
Yeah, but the reason I'm saying that, though, is that when he's talking about father, he's talking about father as a title, not as you're in my dad. See, what most people don't recognize is that at the time, every one of the emperors of Rome, Yehuda was a Roman province, and all of the emperors of Rome were patre. They were called father of fathers.
Oh yeah, they had to do that. Oh, absolutely,
yes.
Sure.
So they were all referred to themselves as father of fathers. So it's like Joseph Stalin referred to himself as the great father. The nincompoop in North Korea referred to himself as the great father. Every Catholic cleric is a father. The Pope is the holy father. So,
direct opposite.
And the Pope is taking that from the Roman situation where Yahusha in a Roman province is saying, no, don't call yourself father in the sense of a political or religious title. That's what he's saying.
Right.
Yeah. So the guy that came back with the well, haven't you ever called your dad father? He's not thinking. That's not what he's talking about.
No, I mean clearly that's not what was being said there. You couldn't go out and say, "Hey, Paulos, my biological dad." You know, he was robbing you while he was speaking to you. Remember, he needed money. He complained he didn't get enough money.
Yeah.
So yeah. Yeah,
so,
I don't think your dad would do that.
No. So here is an example where Yahweh is inspiring Dod to say that it is appropriate for us to want people who are opposing Yahweh's testimony humiliated. Now, you'll notice, though, Dod all the way through this has said that I want your words on my lips. I want your thoughts in my heart. I want what you have to say to be what I have to say. He's made that point time and time and again up to this point. And so what he's saying is they twist and pervert what I've shared. So he's not sharing, you know, this is what I don't say.
Oh, I just gave you a perfect example of that. And I got to tell you, after that, I just blocked the guy. I mean, I put LOL and just blocked the guy. I mean, he couldn't be serious. I mean, that's just stupid.
But here is Dod saying that he wants those humiliated that twist what he says. So you gave me a great example. This person you were talking about that we ought not have the religious title father, and Paul was bequeathing that title on himself for those who were not his biological children.
Yeah, that's exactly what he did.
Paul was using, Paul was saying it in exactly the way that Yosha said not to say it. And this guy was trying to twist God's testimony to make it acceptable.
It's called tap dancing for Paul. This goes on all the time.
Yes.
You know?
So, and that is what Dode is saying. He says, you know, I don't appreciate it when they twist what I say, because what I'm sharing is your perspective, your testimony. And yes, when they twist what I'm telling them about you because of their own presumptuousness, I want them humiliated. I want them to recognize what they have done is wrong. And he, like we, aren't going to get that satisfaction much of the time, at least over the next 16 to 19 years or 15 to 19 years, 13 to 19 years, depending on when we check out of here. We're not going to get that satisfaction. Most of the religious people are going to continue to be obnoxious. But there is a time when those who promoted religion, we will see them humiliated. They will recognize they were wrong. There will be satisfaction in that. And he's saying that there is nothing wrong with us being getting a sense of satisfaction on those who have misled, those who have twisted our presentation of God's testimony, getting their comeuppance. And I don't think we go around and we say it like, you know, Muhammad always used to do, boy, my God's going to get you. But
no,
back
that's
of our minds, we ought to know it.
They say that. I just use his words.
Yeah. So I myself, so Dode is now going on, once again explaining, I meditate on, I think about, I focus on the instructions which, the pakudim, which you've entrusted us so that we can respond properly to you. So he is reemphasizing the fact that Dode is not promoting his own agenda, and he's not trying to humiliate people who are criticizing his agenda. He's not like Paul, who wrote, you know, may they be damned, may they be cursed, whoever speaks against me, and but I say, and then may they be damned and cursed, whoever speaks against me. It's the, this is the opposite of that. He's saying that it's Yahweh's testimony that he's studying and that he's sharing, and they're twisting that. And we have a right to be angry. God's
you know
angry.
What? It's interesting that you say that, because there's you know, a pretty good number of people in the chat room that are in unpopular truth, and I've seen them debate, and I've been in debates, you know, with them.
Yes.
And the one thing that they do is that all of them, they use Yahweh's words, and and they get sent to hell, but they never send anybody to hell.
Yeah.
I don't send people to hell either. I just, you know, laugh at them, make fun of their family, something like that. But I don't send people to hell. There's no point in it, you know. But they all get sent to hell, just like I do. So you're what you just described is exactly what goes on. That's what
goes
on.
Yeah, and it's appropriate. This next line is a very endearing line for me personally. This is the 79th verse. Those who revere and respect you, turn to me, and they will come to know and understand your eternal witness. Now, the reason that line is so endearing to me is that is how I went from thinking that observing the Torah in terms of learning from it and enjoying what I was learning from it was right, to being certain it was right. And Dode is so certain that he's right. He's willing to say, turn to me. If you really love God, turn to me, and you'll come to understand God's witness. Man, you have got to be really, really certain when you go that far.
Yeah, that's a bold statement, but, you know, Dode was a bold guy, too, you know, and he was...
But, you know, and there's a difference. I mean, like in my case, I will never tell somebody to turn to me if you want to understand. But what I will say is that I've come to understand God, and I can explain who he is to you, and I can share his testimony with you, and you can come to know him too. That's different than saying, you know, turn to my writings and you'll come to know him. But the difference is, Dode is literally being inspired by him. He knows that what he is writing is inspired by Yahweh. And so he can say, these words that I'm sharing with you, turn to me, read them, celebrate them. If you love Yahweh, consider what I'm saying right here, and if you do that, you're going to come to understand his witness. And from my perspective, there is nothing that we have ever been given that is as valuable to understanding Yahweh's Torah as this song. And the fact he would be so bold as to say, you know, you love God, you respect him, you turn to me, and you will understand his witness. That's as reinforcing, as affirming, as anything that you know, personally, that I'm ever going to say, because I think you all know I'm at the Dode extreme. I think that the Torah is teaching to be understood, and that is what he's sharing here. As a matter of fact, the term that he's using is yada. You know, if we turn to Dode, we study his songs, then we will come to know and understand yada, his edah, which is his eternal witness. That's been my experience. That's why this is the second time we've been through this song. He is telling us that the stuff that he is conveying about the Torah is what we need to know to understand it. So I would ask you, Larry, where in this, or James, where in this psalm does it tell you not to eat pepperoni?
Never seen it come up.
No. Where does it say in this song that if you work a half day on the Shabbat as you join my family, that I'm going to kick you out of my family?
Kick you out.
Never says that.
Where does he say in this that, you know, I expect you to do what I tell you to do, and these are commandments, and I'm going to list the commandments, and I expect you to obey them?
No way.
I haven't seen that.
No. Did Dode at any place in this time say, God, I know you really love me because I do everything you ask?
Nope.
No.
No. 100% of this psalm up to this point has been conveying examination, consideration, understanding, knowledge,
observation,
thinking, and then responding to what we have learned in an appropriate way, whether that be joy, whether that be appreciation, whether that be confidence. There's a lot of confidence in here. And sometimes even frustration. When I first learned what the merits of the covenant and the mikra and of Yahweh's name, and I looked at having been lied to for so many years by Christians, I was angry. I was really angry at them. I was mad at them. Why'd they do that? So, and beyond that, he has reemphasized four words. It's four words all the way through. And that he said, this is what you need to focus on. And they are the choke, which are the inscribed, that which has been cut into stone, that which is dependable, that which has been engraved, which cuts you into the relationship. So everything regarding the relationship which Yahweh has said, that's you ought to pay attention to. The Pekudim, you ought to pay attention to the Pekudim, which are the prescriptions for living that you've entrusted us that help us respond to you. Because one thing to know what God is offering, another thing to respond. And then the mitzvot. Boy, you need to know the mitzvah, the terms and conditions of the covenant. If you don't know the terms and conditions of the covenant, you can't participate. And then since misbought the invitations to meet with God, where he resolves all issues that separate us, are so essential as to benefit the covenant's children. That's the other thing he asks us to suggest that we focus on. That's it. There's not a single rule in any of this. Not one. You know, he doesn't tell you what you can eat, what you should do, there's not a single instruction in this other than pay attention, study, observe, think. So,
Whole lot of thoughtlessness out there. I mean, I emailed you today, remember? I said, you know, when they were talking about the three times, I figured that's right where it was. I said, why don't you look at what he was doing?
Yes.
Well, you know, talking about Daniel, how he went to the very top and he opened up the curtains and he faced Jerusalem. Why don't you consider what he was doing? I mean, where in the world? Well, and then he comes off with the rabbis do it, the Orthodox do it, the mystic Jews do it. Let's follow all the religious boobs right down the path.
You know, what?
Yeah.
A million people can't be wrong. Oh, yeah, they can.
I guess they can. What Daniel was officially doing is flipping the bird to the king.
Yeah.
The king says the edict was that the other bigwigs, hobnobs, the other social climbers, aristocratic types in Babylon were threatened by Daniel, because Daniel was smarter, more confident than they were. He wasn't even conniving, so there was nothing they could do about Daniel, and they knew it. And so they were afraid of him. They were paranoid of him. So what they did is the text itself explains this. Because they were paranoid of him, they plotted a scheme that they knew that Daniel would not comply with. And that was this idea that you have to bow down before the king as if he were God. And they knew Daniel wouldn't do it. And so it's one thing for Daniel to walk up there and not bow down. He says, you know, I've got no issue acknowledging who is God. But I'm going to tell you so you can all see me, the tallest window I've got in my place, I'll show you the direction I'll bow. And then, as for your king, no, I'm not getting on my knees in front of your king. He was flipping him the bird.
Yeah, that was an act of civil disobedience.
Correct.
That's
exactly
what it was.
Exactly what it is. By the way, where was Daniel at the time?
He was in Babylon.
Right.
Is that what you mean?
Yeah, Yahweh doesn't spend a lot of time in Babylon. And so, you know, if there was ever a place that you may want to carve some time out of your day to say, oh, God, this place is just horrific. Can we have some you and me time?
Yeah, it's like this is where I live today, so I get it. Yeah, I really do.
But it's, by the way, it's really interesting, too, that to find an example of somebody praying,
you have to look at an act of civil disobedience.
And you have to look at Daniel. You can't find it in Yeshayah, a major prophet. You can't find it in Yirmiyah, a major prophet. You can't.
You don't
find
see
it
Abraham doing it.
You can't find it with Moshe. So you got to go all the way to Daniel for crying out loud.
Yeah, you got to go to an obvious act of civil disobedience.
Right.
I mean, where in the world did Yahweh say, get on your knees and pray religiously so everybody can see you? I mean, he says the opposite all over the place, you know.
I haven't been on my knees in prayer since I was a Christian. I specifically don't bow my head, and I specifically don't get on my knees when I chat with God. But, you know, understand, too, I'm at the far extreme with this. I'd much rather listen to God than I would talk to him. That's just me. I like what he has to say. I find him more interesting than I am. So that happens to be my perspective. And
the way you put it, the way you put it really struck home with a woman who's been walking. She's walking out of Catholicism up in New York, Terry, a friend of mine, and she said, you know, the way you guys talked about prayer. And I said, yeah, I don't do it, you know. And she got it to where it's listening when you're doing his words instead of a bunch of begging. I mean, isn't that what we see, a bunch of begging?
And how do we listen to God? We read his Torah. You recite his words, and you can listen to him. There's another way to listen to him, too. It's one of my favorites, which is that I'll be in the midst of writing a chapter, translating something, and I'll have some quiet time away from it. And I'll have my mind focused on what he was saying, and you know, say, well, what kind of an insight can we add to this? What are you trying to convey here? And by the time I can get back to the keyboard, there's more things than I want to say that I can't even remember by the time I get there. So there's a lot of sharing that goes on.
Well, there's times that happens to me. I'm in the middle of trying to explain something to some people. I'm trying to figure out how to do that. And then I go and I sit on the couch a minute. I go, yeah, this is what I got to get at, you know. And it happens. So
let those who revere and respect you turn to me, and they will come to know and understand your eternal witness. And again, here, this is a ode to the Torah. So the eternal witness here is the Torah. Full stop. Nothing more than the Torah. May my heart continue to exist. Oh, by the way, one of the things I wanted to say about Daniel that was interesting is when I started translating Daniel, the first thing that I came to is that, well, there are times where Daniel is pleading, and it's the Hebrew word for prayer, and he's interceding, and he's talking with God, and he's actually asking God. He says, listen, we got a bad situation here. We're all slaves here in Babylon. We'd all love to get back to Israel. We'd all like to be able to rebuild the temple. And here we sit as slaves in Babylon. And I know that we've been really cruddy. But we could sure use your mercy. And there are times where, two or three times, you'll hear him say that, and he's writing it down as he's saying it. Almost every one of those occasions, though, he has spent considerable time prior to that studying the Torah, prophets, and Psalms. And he will comment on what he's learned from the Torah, prophets, and Psalms even before he has that or right after he says that. So he's communicating in the midst of listening. It's not that he is just blabbling on to God. You have to take it out of context to get the wrong impression. May my heart continue to exist blameless and perfect with regard to your clearly communicated prescriptions of what I should do, these inscribed prescriptions that cut me into the relationship, so that I am not humiliated and ashamed. 119:80. And here, Dode was not perfect, but his heart was perfect. Now, he's not saying, you know, the Christian thing, well, God knows my heart and everything's going to be cool. Yes, he's referencing the heart, but the heart here, and James, you did a lot of research on this, where when the heart is mentioned in Hebrew, what they're talking about is the individual completely incorporating what they have learned. It's you go from the mind to the heart when you accept what you have learned, when you embrace what you've learned, when what you have learned defines your perspective and focus and attitude towards life.
Yeah.
So he is saying that his heart's perfect because he's accepted, he's embraced, he's come to understand what God is offering. And that is what has made his heart perfect. Like, I can tell you, as an individual, I'm not perfect. My perspective is pretty darn perfect. Because the perspective is our understanding of God, seeing God as he actually is. Seeing him as dad, coming to understand the covenant. That's the right perspective because it's God's perspective. It makes that perspective, that attitude towards God, perfect because it reflects who he really is and what he's offering. And so we can actually say that our attitude and our perspective our understanding of perfect when we understand exactly who he is. We too, under those that definition, have a blameless and perfect heart. And he is again saying that his heart is blameless for somebody who wants to take this passage out of context and say, you know, well, I know my may my heart continue to exist blameless and perfect. And they'll take it out of context and say, see, God really does look at our content of our heart. But what's the second part of it? You know, my heart is perfect because, or with regard to the choke, these engraved inscriptions that cut us into the relationship. That's why his heart's perfect. That's why his perspective is correct. That's why his attitude is right. And when that's the case, unlike the people he wanted to be humiliated and shamed, when we have the right understanding of who Yahweh is, we will not be humiliated or ashamed. All right, that brings us to the letter Kaf. The next eight statements will be brought to us by the letter Kaf. Some of the most important words that we're going to see with the letter Kaf are kala, which means to yearn for, kun, which means design, directed. It also means to stand. We'll find the kaf in kol, which speaks of all. We'll find the kaf in ka, which means in accordance with. All of those things are K words. So the first is, my soul yearns, kala. You know, this is the K word. My soul yearns for your salvation. In accordance with your word, I expect a favorable resolution. I went out to dinner last night with my realtor and realtor representing a client and the client. And the one of the two women, I had dinner with, a realtor. She married a Jewish man and raised their sons, and the bar mitzvah for their sons and all that sort of thing. And so we got in to a, you know, a whole discussion on religion versus the Torah. And she kept on saying, so what do you believe? Let me understand what you believe. And I said, I don't believe anything. Oh, well, you know, you believe in God, no? But you said you know him, yes? Well, do you believe in Judaism, no? Christianity, no? Well, what is it that you believe? I don't believe anything. You know,
yeah, when I can know.
Yeah, and so I said, let me give you an example of the difference between believing and knowing. You're familiar with the opening lines of the Torah where Yahweh claims that he created the heavens and earth in 6 days, right?
Oh, this, I got to love this, yeah.
Yeah, and she said, yeah.
You know what, I was just about to tell you a story about that particular note, but go right ahead.
Okay, so I said, so you're familiar with that, that story, yeah, 6 days. I said, have you ever heard of the cosmic microwave radiation from the Big Bang? And she said, yeah, I've heard of that. I said, you know, the Big Bang is Yahweh's term. He coined the term Big Bang. And she said, I didn't know that. Yeah, yeah, it's his term. Do you know, are you familiar with the concept of relativity, that time is relative to the witness based upon velocity and mass? She says, yes, I've heard that. Okay. Cosmic background radiation tells us that time moved 10 to the 12th more slowly because the wavelength from the Big Bang is stretched 10 to the 12th power. Do you follow me? You know what 10 to the 12th power means? And she's a bright woman. How that time in the place of the great energy and velocity of the Big Bang, of the universe's creation, would have moved 10 to the 12th times slower. She says, yeah, okay, I'm with you and all that.
Let's do the math.
I said, what do you think you get when you multiply 14 billion years times 365 and a quarter days a year, and then you divide that by 10 to the 12th power? And she says, you're telling me the number is 6? And I said, yeah, the number 6. And she just gulped.
This turns out this is all real. We're not playing religion.
She just gulped, and she says, wow, that is amazing. You know, that leaves you speechless.
You one better than that. I really can. I shared that note.
Yeah.
I explained relativity.
Yep.
And at the end, the woman says, now, you're a Christian. And I said, no. And she goes, okay, so you're into Judaism. I said, no. She goes, well, do you believe in God?
No.
I didn't say anything at that point. I thought, what a stupid question is that?
Yeah, now, see, I didn't get that response. The response I got was...
Yeah, but no, I'm telling you, it goes that far. It goes one step further. And I'll tell you something else. And I had this today with a guy that's a Messianic Jew that I know. And there's a V for everything. Even Abraham is really Avraham, believe it or not.
Okay.
Yeah. Av is Av.
Where is that letter V? Of course, alphabet is from Aleph and Beth. And he knows that the covenant is Beth, but it's a V. Okay, all right. Yeah, sure, I'm with you.
It just makes no sense. Doesn't have to because it's rabbinic Judaism combined with Yoshua. Bottom line was, he started telling me the mystics. This was when he was going through the three times a day with Daniel. I said, I explained he was just practicing civil disobedience that Yah was not into people submitting on their knees and, his people are standing and so forth. And he threw all this Judaism, these Orthodox do it and the Hasidics do it and the mystics do it. And I said, that's all real wonderful. I said, but he established a family covenant. Now, if I said to you next door, those are the Joneses, and I want you to go in and introduce yourself to them, you're going to go in and have dinner with them, would you create a religion out of it? I mean, isn't that what's happened here?
Yeah, right. And if you wanted to have a family, would you tell your children to bow down and worship you?
No,
I don't think
wouldn't.
So. In this particular case, when I was talking to this woman, her response was, that is indeed profound. I said, now that's the difference between believing and knowing. And I said, so when you look at all of the prophecies that have been fulfilled and you look at all the statements that are made, that after a while you go from wondering to knowing for certain. So there's no reason to believe. And it resonated with her. I don't know what will ultimately transpire. But that is where Dode is with this statement. My soul yearns for your salvation. In other words, he's kind of where we are a lot of days where you say, okay, I know we have a job to do. I'm enjoying life. I'm enjoying my family. But, man, it would really be you don't really have to linger if you don't want to. You could give me the express ticket out of here at any time, and it might be okay. And that's what he said. I'm yearning for your salvation, and it happens to be Yeshua is the way it's written. It's Yashuwah. It's not spelled the same way as the name Yahusha, but it is it's pronounced the same way. Your salvation, your Yeshua. In accordance with your word, I expect a favorable resolution. Yakal is, I confidently wait. I know it's not a belief word. I am absolutely, resolutely confident. There's no question in my mind. That's what he's saying. I'm not hoping that I'm saved. I'm not putting my faith in you. I know I'm saved. I expect a favorable resolution. It's if it weren't for how he got to that spot, it would be, you know, it's like if you were to go to if you were living in feudal Europe, and the king was adjudicating a case, and before he has pronounced his decision, you say, you know, I expect a favorable resolution here. I mean, you'd be toast. And he's now talking to the creator God of the universe, and he's saying, hey, you know, I expect a favorable resolution. It's what God wants us to. That's exactly what he wants us to do. Trust him. I expect a favorable resolution. I expect a favorable resolution. I'm confident. My eyes long for and are restricted to your word, your instruction, and your promise. That's the Imra. It's the variation of Dabar, where it does mean word, but it has a nuance of promise associated with word. So my eyes long for and are restricted to. Kala is the, you know, we're in the K section here. So my we're in that longing here, and this is a jealous longing. This is a Kala is the kind of yearning that is pining for one's wife, not for the next door neighbor. It's so it's a restrictive, loyal yearning. So my eyes are long for, restricted to your word, your promise, in order to declare and share, in order to declare and share, as when you will comfort and console me. So Dode is again reemphasizing how he observes. He is observant, not with his hands, not with his feet. It's not, he's not observing by obeying or by keeping. He's observing with his eyes. And he says that his eyes are focused. They yearn for, they are focused on Yahweh's word. That's why he's in the position that he's in. That's why he's chosen as the righteous one and the model for the kingdom. And he's expecting God, therefore, to share. He's expecting. He wants to share the answers. For you have designed and fashioned me to be firmly established and appropriately directed, similar to a vessel of skin and a parchment scroll prepared for inscribing, while enveloped within a cloud. Your mercy and steadfast love have not overlooked, I have not overlooked, ignored, or forgotten. Here again is a kun word. Kun meaning to establish. It's the K version of the Q, which is the most popular of the kun. And the thing that is remarkable here, now what Dode is saying, if you want to understand God, you know, come to me. I'll help you understand God's word. And one of the first things that he says about how you can understand God's word is to look how you were fashioned. We are the only animal fashioned to be upright on 2 feet, aren't we?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're the only animal fashioned with opposable thumbs, so we can grasp hold of one another in this way, and we can write, and we can turn pages. And we're the only animal like that. We're the only animal that actually builds homes, consistently builds homes to raise our children. There are other animals that that mate for life, but we, you know, we have a formal marriage. We as an animal have different roles, male and female. We were conceived in such a way that would model what God is offering. Our offspring, it's not like the offspring of a deer. The deer baby fawn dropped, and you know it's expected within a matter of hours, certainly within a day or two, to be able to scamper away from a predator.
Yeah, you know, it's a matter of hours, even minutes, yes, with some of them.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And what would happen if you were to mother and father were to set their baby aside?
Well, it's not capable. They have to be watched out for.
Right.
You know.
And you know, every aspect of how we're conceived creates a metaphor. From our houses to our marriages to our nurturing of children and starting them off with milk and them growing to eat meat and more nourishing, substantial food and us being upright, our hands, the uniqueness of the way our eyes focus, the fact that we are a visual creature. For example, I've got a loving four-legged friend, a dog, and she devotes some 70% of her brain to smell. Like smell in three dimensions, that remarkable sense of smell. That sense of smell wouldn't do us any good.
I know, that caught me at the border several times now.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding.
And so, So in our case, it wouldn't do us any good. We were designed to use our eyes to observe and respond to our environment that way. We were designed. So you know how debilitating it is to be in this world and not be able to hear and not be able to see?
Oh, horrible.
Yeah, horrible. You know, our world was designed around seeing and hearing. What are the two things God asked us to do relative to the covenant? Rather to the Torah.
Listen,
read
to
it.
Them and
right.
See them.
Read it and recite it. Yeah, listen to it. You know, we were designed this way. This is part of the plan, and the most important part of the plan is the way we come together as families and raise children and the way that we maneuver, we walk through life upright. It's we were specifically designed to convey the nature of the covenant relationship Yahweh was offering us. And Dode says, you want to know Yahweh's word? You want to understand it? Listen to me. And this is what he's saying here. For you have designed and fashioned me to be firmly established and appropriately directed. And then he goes on to, similar to, a vessel of skin and a parchment scroll prepared for inscribing. A vessel of skin will hold, you know, they were designed principally to tote wine back in the day. And then the parchment scroll was for inscribing the testimony. And he says that they're enveloped within a cloud, which means they're not going to dry out, they're not going to crack. I understand that when you envelop me in your set-apart spirit, I'm not going to wither up and die. I'm going to stay such that I can continue to grow. And I'm not going to grow hard, I'm not going to grow brittle, and I'm not going to be blown away in the wind. And that's the same thing with the scroll. If there's some moisture there, it doesn't get brittle. And your mercy and your steadfast love I have not overlooked, ignored, or forgotten. When you view our upright nature in harmony with Yahweh's parental love, that's when the whole picture comes into focus. So it's how we were designed as families. You know, the way we love our husbands and wives and children and parents, this is what God is trying to convey. That's the nature of His love. Although His is a little better than some of us had as parents. The next statement is another one of these that has Asa in it. We got into this because of Asa. Thus far, all of the action has been Yahweh, has been the actor. That is not changing. When accordingly is the day of your servant? How long before you act in judgment against those who are pursuing and persecuting me? You know, there's that statement that Yosha makes, love your enemies, and he talks about, you know, turning the other cheek and that sort of thing. And I've always made the distinction here that Yahweh was ruthless with the enemies of God, which were the religious and political leaders. He really tore them up verbally.
Humiliated them.
Dode is saying here, you know, I want you to judge those who are pursuing and persecuting me. And Dode isn't saying that because Dode has his own private agenda. If it was his own private agenda that Dode says, you know, I would really like to have the nicest house on the street, and I want to have the prettiest girl, and I want to have the nicest chariot, and that I really think I deserve the nicest pair of sandals. If that was Dode's agenda, and somebody else
probably
had
all that just and didn't care, but, you know, whatever.
But if that was his agenda, and he was competing against somebody that wanted a better pair of sandals, then you don't invoke God's judgment against that individual.
No.
But if somebody is attacking you because you represent what Yahweh is saying, what he cares about, and that you're compelled to spend your life sharing what Yahweh is about, which is condemning of religion and politics, when people attack you, they're attacking him.
You know, it's hard for me to imagine that somebody could attack Dode for a number of reasons. You know, but
they did.
I mean, he certainly brings it up in this Mizmor a lot, his enemies and so forth.
Saul was a foe for most of his life. You know, Saul, wanted to hunt him down and do away with him. They were on the outs. You know, at the time, Yisrael saying, "Hey, we want a king like other countries have a king. We want to be just like those Gentiles that have kings. We want the biggest, strongest, most handsome, most articulate warrior to represent us, so that we have a king." You know, God saying, "Ah, you know, you really don't want one of those." "Oh yeah, we do." No, you already want." Yeah, we do." And it's all right. Well, that's what you want. Then okay, you can have that. And then all the while, God is cultivating this relationship with Dode. And the king, of course, is just terribly jealous because God has the affection not for the king but for Dode.
Mm-hmm.
And look what Dode, who didn't have any power at the time, left as a legacy.
Yeah, he was a shepherd out there. Yeah.
Yeah. Look what he left as a legacy for us.
Oh well, he's awesome. I mean, Dode's awesome by any standard. I mean, really, he's awesome.
So Dode did have enemies, and he ultimately wanted God to sentence, to bring justice to. He wanted him to act to bring justice to those who were pursuing him. If you're pursuing your own agenda, that would be an inherently wrong thing to do. You know, when I competed in business, I never wanted my competitors harmed. I never even thought of that perspective. But when it comes to sharing Yahweh's testimony and you're going up against the Pope, I want him judged. Absolutely. You know, if I'm going up against a rabbi, I want the rabbi judged. If I'm going up against the Muslim guy, I want him judged.
You know, Lisa just asked something here in the chat room. She asked, why isn't Dode recognized as a prophet? Is Dode not recognized as a prophet?
Oh, no, he's absolutely a prophet. Circle? No, he's also
obviously. No, anybody that speaks for Yahweh is a prophet. I mean,
but his prophecies, Dode's prophecies are some of the most magnificent prophecies of all time.
Talked about
Psalm 22 and Psalm 88 are just stunningly important prophecies. No, Dode's absolutely a prophet.
Who doesn't recognize him as a prophet? I don't. Maybe
Well, you know, it's the same thing would be true. Most people don't call Moshe a prophet.
Mm-hmm.
But yet he was a prophet. It is all sorts of... But keep in mind that while Yahweh was kind, generous, really, in calling the likes of Yashaya and Yirmiyah prophets, they weren't prophets. They really weren't prophets. Dod really wasn't a prophet. Moshe really wasn't a prophet.
Well, these were people that listened. They could hear him, and they could scribe for him. That's what a prophet was. I mean,
yeah,
I'm not saying they saw personally
and that's really the point, is that Yashaya did, what Dod did, is they listened to Yahweh. They studied what Yahweh. They came to know Yahweh, and Yahweh chose to use them as a means to communicate with us, both orally and in writing.
Yeah.
And so they were a prophet in the sense of listening and sharing.
Yeah, well, that's what a prophet is. I understand there's people that they think there's some spiritual mind meld or something to all this. It's not any of that.
No,
I mean,
it's strictly listening and sharing. That's all it is.
Well, I think once you understand Yahweh's a being of pure energy, you can get all that other out of the way right away.
Yeah,
you should be able to.
Yeah, and even in this realm, God is not predicting the future. You know, he's reporting what he's witnessed in our future, in our past, is what's happening here. But Dod is absolutely a prophet. Now, you know, I refer to it as the Torah prophets and Psalms, and actually, while there are places where Yahusha refers to it as the Torah prophets and Psalms, he is more inclined to either say just Torah, or just Torah and prophets. And the Psalms don't mean just the Psalms. It actually means the writings. And so, you know, you have in the book of Shamuel, for example, there's prophetic statements. So when Yahusha is trying to summarize it, he can call it just the Torah because his teaching permeates everything that he inspired. And so Torah fits. And he can call it Torah and prophets because there is a universal aspect to every one of every book that he inspired. They all have prophetic statements in them. If there is no prophecy in it, then it doesn't have God's signature. All right, so the arrogant and haughty, the insolent and presumptuous, those who are self-willed, self-absorbed, and self-motivated have dug a pit for me which relationally is not in accord with your Torah. Once again, it's just, I made an assumption several times now when I was saying, you know, Dod is not talking about his personal enemies. He's talking about people that are antagonistic towards him because of what he's saying about God. That is a messenger.
That's right. I mean, yeah, I think that is the right assumption there. That's what he said.
But,
I mean, that's what he's talking about.
Well, what my point right here is that assumption is no longer necessary because he has emphatically said it, that those who are arrogant and haughty, those who are digging a pit for him, what they're saying is not in accord with the Torah. So what that tells us is the argument is over what the Torah says, right? You know, at that point,
well,
it must
have been a Torah, yeah.
A Torah-based argument. It's like the arguments that you have all the time. They're based on the Torah. You say, this is what the Torah represents. They say, no, it's not. And I say, this is what God said.
Yeah, well, I shouldn't even be. I shouldn't be surprised they went after Dod. They went after Yahusha. It doesn't matter. Yeah,
right.
Of course they went after him.
Yeah.
I think they cut Yashaya in half with a saw or something, didn't they?
Yeah, sure, they
would.
They're trying to bury him. These self-willed, arrogant folks are trying to bury Dod And I don't think they're Doe's not saying they're, you know, dug a grave for him. I mean, they're trying to bury him in the sense of do away with him, get him out of sight. You know, when it, the term, you know, I'm going to bury you, doesn't mean that you're going to go off and put a bunch of dirt over somebody. It means that you're going to do away with them. You're going to figure out a way to neuter them. So that they're no longer heard or seen. That's what those who were promoting that, which was against the Torah, were trying to do, because if they could silence Dode, then it was much easier for them to fool everybody else. Because Dode was the one guy saying, no, no, no. This is what the Torah says. And that was the whole argument that he was having. The entire animosity was over the Torah, which means that they weren't his enemies. They were Yahweh's enemies. They were only his enemies because they were Yahweh's enemies.
Must have been Dode versus the clerics or something along those lines.
Well, yeah, it's mostly that, you know, when you look at every country, and this would be true now also with Israel at this time, Shaul was king, but Shaul was at that time, the king was everything. It wasn't just a political leader. It wasn't just a government leader. The king was the religious leader. The king was the military leader. In almost all of these cultures, king and emperor and shah, no matter what the title was, if you were the top dog, you were the general. You were the pope. You were the authoritative government ruler. It was all. In fact, you established the economy. And so those that are going after him are those who were empowered through the kingdom that was established with Shaul. Saul. So, yeah, that's all there was going against him, is the government that was established around Shaul. But Shaul was far more than just a political leader of Israel. He was also the religious leader. He was also the military leader. And collectively, that's who was trying to do Dode in. So, guys, I think we're at the end of our time here today. We can at least print out, share one more passage, and it's every one of the terms and conditions of your relationship agreement is trustworthy and reliable. The liars deceive and mislead. Pursue and persecute me. Please support and assist me. This is the, again, affirmation. The religious leaders, the political leaders, the leadership in Israel was in opposition to Dode because Dode was telling them what God said in the Torah. And
they were out of their mind. Well, they are out of their mind.
Right. And he says that he has found that the terms and conditions of the covenant, the mitzvah, that they are trustworthy and they are reliable. They're enduring. And so those who are opposed to it, like, for example, Paul, who has a new covenant, he says, no, if you're going to change what is trustworthy and reliable, like the terms and conditions of the covenant, the mitzvah, then you're a liar. Then you're deceiving. And if you want to pursue me and criticize me for affirming the reliability of the terms and conditions of the covenant, have at it. Because in this case, Yahweh is assisting us with his word. That is Paul's, or Dode's conclusion right here.
And that's exactly right. Have at it. Have at it.
You know, have at it.
Good luck to you on that.
Good
one.
Luck, because
you know,
he's saying that, you know, it's uncomfortable to say this publicly, but he is saying, God, I want your support. He's admitting that he is inadequate. As smart as he is, that he needs help. And, you know, kind of like when I said, all right, I'll go after Islam, but if I'm going to go after Islam, I want help. You know, if we're going to do it. We're going to do it together. I want the assistance. I want the help. And so that's what Dota say. I want the help because they are those who are contrary to your covenant instructions. They're liars. Your covenant is trustworthy. There isn't another, it's not multiples of them. They're misleading, and I want your help to demonstrate why they're misleading.
Well, and I'm sure that that pit was dug, and they walked right into it. Of course, that's what happened. So I just going after Doubt, somebody would have to be a total idiot. But, you know,
yeah, can you imagine? You got the smartest guy in the world that has a direct relationship with God, where God is inspiring him to write the most insightful lyrics, prophetic lyrics, the most brilliant lyrics in the universe, and that's what the guy you decide you're going to go up against. This is a guy that defeated the army of the Philistines with the slingshot and one stone.
No, I know. Yeah, I mean, you're talking about a man's man there, and I don't.
Yeah.
I would think going up against him would be a pretty dangerous business because he had the capabilities. He had no fear, and he had a brain that wouldn't stop. So,
you're right.
And then he's the guy with the relationship with Yahweh. You know? So,
yeah.
But you know. What we should expect this. I mean, you know, you can set. I found myself sitting in a room here about a week ago with four religious initiates and just me, and it was just pathetic. They were standing there with their tradition like they were holding a shield against me, you know. And I just thought,
wow, yeah, you know, there is a sense of comfort when you. Expose yourself to criticism or you go off into a discussion, even if you're outnumbered and outflanked by religious people. It doesn't matter how many there are. It's
no,
a sense of comfort because we're representing ultimate truth, someone who is absolutely unassailable. And the offer he is making is so marvelous that there is nothing anybody can say that is going to be effective in terms of criticism.
Yeah, and it actually works that way. I mean, it does really work that way in real life. It really works that way. And you stand there and you feel like you're in an armored tank and they're standing there with spears in front of you or something. It's just pathetic.
Oh, I know. I know.
It's
and it's hard not to just go and say, what you're saying here is just so idiotic. You know, why would you wallow in this rubbish? You know, and most all of them, what they find is since they can't respond to the Word of God, they just simply go to their next point. You know, they could have lost 20 arguments and the first 20 issues, and they'll just go to the 21st.
Well, you know, when I'm doing debates, you know, most of the time I always have notes. I rarely put my opinions in there, okay?
Yeah.
It's done with you know, words straight out of,
yes.
You know.
Well, you know, when, particularly Christianity is so dedicated on Paul. And while questioning Paul has 1,200 pages of arguments against Paul, the fact is that you really don't have to go past any one of about 10. And when any one of about 10, it's just over. Like if somebody claims to see me before the whole world sees me at one time, they're a liar. Don't follow them.
Do you know how many times I've used that and they just blow right by it? They don't care.
Yeah.
Full stop, that.
Yeah, full stop. I mean, that's you can't resolve that. When he says, "Don't think that I came to annul the Torah," and Paul says that the Torah only existed until he came, full stop. You can't resolve that. When he said, "I'm demon possessed," full stop. You know, when you're dealing with Christianity, which is the most popular religion in human history, And Yosha says that the way to death is popular, and the way to life is restrictive, and it's got very strict requirements, and very few find it. You can't resolve that when a Christian says that God died for my sins.
Yeah,
I'm sorry. God can't die.
God's not dead. Got news for you.
Yeah, when Yahweh describes every aspect of Paul's nature, personality, and mission, and who he spoke to, and then names him by name and says, he's the plague of death, and inspires it exactly 666 years before he'd write his first letter. I'm sorry, you can't fix that.
No, you can't, I am telling you, they don't, I don't know, it's like their mind goes blank. But I will tell you this, in these debates, you know, in the running debates, you're throwing words down. Mm-hmm. As an example, what you just said. Okay.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And, boy, there's 10 of them jump right in with opinions. But you know what they never do? They never use Yahweh's words. And if they do, it's some little twisted thing out of the New Testament. It's a one-liner or something that usually has nothing to do with the subject, by the way.
Yeah,
I mean,
okay,
it's really weird.
Let's go to Galatians, where Paul says that the covenant that is was presented on Mount Sinai, which would be the covenant in the Torah, was with Hagar, and it enslaves. You tell me where it says that the covenant was with Hagar.
Well, it
she was,
doesn't.
But she was sent off into oblivion, and the covenant was affirmed with Abraham and Sarah through Yishak, their son. And so,
right.
You can't solve that. I mean, it isn't fixable.
Well, I've had him tell me, well, he says speaking allegorically.
Really? Allegorically would be where I'm telling you a parable. But the parable he's telling is the opposite of what, you know, allegorically, the covenant was created between a man and his wife, not between a man and his slave.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
That wife
just happened to be named Sarah, which is the middle word in Yisrael. In case you didn't get the picture.
Well, you know, I don't know what to tell you. You've said it. You know, all rationality goes out the window, and you know that's what happened. But it's like you're dealing with an unarmed dolt. I laugh through it all. I've had him say, we're getting him, we're making him mad. And I'm going, yeah, I'm all kinds of mad. How do you answer this? And throw it, and then 5 minutes later, they're all telling me I'm going to burn in the hottest places of hell, which I always enjoy.
Yeah, okay.
You know?
Yeah, wow, okay. Yeah, I didn't know that a lightless place had heat, but all right.
Yeah,
that's fine. But why don't you tell me how you can have a New Testament? Just tell me, where did you get your idea of a New Testament? Where's this new covenant that you speak of? Where'd it come from? Oh, well, you know, Jeremiah 31. And why don't you read that in context? And
you mean the one where the Torah is going to be written in your heart? Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. The only difference between the existing covenant and the renewed covenant is God's going to actually place a copy of his Torah inside of us.
Yeah, that's how dead the Torah is.
Yeah.
It's an amazing thing.
Yeah, or the Sermon on the Mount, any one of the statements on the Sermon on the Mount. For example, get away from me, those of you who are Torahless, or don't think I came to annul the Torah. There are scores of them, any one of which is the end of the road. That look at a prophet. If a prophet gets one prediction wrong, he's not speaking for me. Well, Paul only had one prophecy; got it wrong.
Yeah, where's that at? Where's that at? Where he talks about the
Thessalonians?
It's in Thessalonians.
First Thessalonians. He talks about the timing of the, or maybe it's Second Thessalonians.
Rapture.
Yeah, the rapture. I think it's Second Thessalonians. The harpazo and. And he says that it will occur, that it's going to occur while he's still alive. He uses Greek and the and scribes the verbs such that he is one of those who's going to participate in the rapture.
Well,
it's going to take those of us who are alive
yanking you up, you know,
yeah,
into the clouds or whatever.
Yeah,
yeah, whatever. You know.
Yeah.
I do all I can to share Yahweh's words. I really do, and I really enjoy doing it now with people that are they've become disillusioned with religion and with church and all that. And I really enjoy that. But I tell you, I absolutely hate any more talking with the religious people. It doesn't matter what you say.
Yeah, last night, one of the two ladies that my realtor and I took out to dinner right after they had toured the house here, she said that she was an agnostic. And I said, well, let me tell you, I don't think there's anyone who is now part of Yahweh's family that I know of who at one time was not an agnostic, and most all of them, their last definition of themselves prior to becoming a member of the covenant would be agnostic. I don't think I don't think there's a single person that's gone from religious to relationship.
I would not say I was agnostic. I knew there was a creator, but I knew he wasn't anywhere near religion. I knew that.
Yeah, but see, an agnostic isn't saying that there isn't a creator. That's an atheist. So you can know that there's a creator, but not know him and be an agnostic. All an agnostic is that I don't know.
I guess you would have to say I was agnostic. You would have to say that.
Right. So agnostic, gnostic is the Greek word for know, and ag negates knowing. So all it says is I don't know.
So you're beating us up here with Greek.
Well, yeah, agnostic. Yeah, that's the basis of the word agnostic is.
I didn't know that.
Did
you know that, JB?
Without knowledge.
Yeah.
Yeah, agnostic is without knowledge.
You knew it too?
Mm-hmm. That's atheist is without God.
Yeah. But the reason
A is a negation in Greek.
Yeah. Right. It's not that we're smart. We're not pretending to be smart. The reason is that the more you study Rome and Greece and Paul and the Council of Nicaea, for example, that created Christianity, you realize that Christianity appealed to the Greeks and to the Romans because the most popular religion at the time was Gnosticism. And
I hear the word Gnostic in there. Sure.
Yeah. And Gnosticism is based on the word for knowing.
So agnostic would be kind of a
not knowing.
Lack of a. Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
I get it.
Yeah. It's just so you're not saying that there's.
Oh,
no
I had
God.
A guy, by the way, tell me that Hebrew was stolen from Greek. Here. I said so. The oldest language in the world. I think Cherie was in on that conversation. I said so. The oldest language in the world was. I said, well, that's interesting. I said, because, you know, I said, you do know when you look at tenses, the only eternal language is Hebrew, you know. I said, we don't find that in Greek language.
Yeah. The only language, there's actually two languages that can make a claim to be older in a written alphabetic form. And both of them, you know, you really got to be on your toes to prove that Hebrew is older than Phoenician, because the Phoenician alphabet and the Hebrew alphabet are really similar. The oldest Phoenician alphabet is essentially indistinguishable from the Hebrew alphabet.
Okay.
And so the reason that I view it as being the Hebrew alphabet, not the Phoenician alphabet, is because the oldest extant example that we have of it as an alphabet, actually written out in alphabetical order, the 22 letters,
is Hebrew.
Is in Hebrew on a cup that's found not in Phoenicia but in Israel. There is the tangible evidence that we have is the oldest proof of a written alphabet is Hebrew. Now,
this guy, by the way, was going on about Atlantis.
Oh, yeah, well,
nonsense,
right,
too.
Yeah.
But go ahead. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Sorry.
The other issue, too, is that that Aramaic is extraordinarily similar. And it would be really difficult to prove which one was preceded the other. The only thing is that we have much older proof of an alphabet for Hebrew than we do an alphabet for Aramaic, because Aramaic was first communicated via Akkadian, and Akkadian we have the cuneiform. And so the cuneiform is not an alphabet. It's a written language, but not an alphabet. You can't pronounce cuneiform. You can understand what the words are. You can dissect them, but you can't pronounce them. It's like Egyptian hieroglyphics. Egyptian hieroglyphics are not an alphabet. It conveys thoughts, but it's not an alphabet. So anyway, that's the thing about Hebrew, though, is whether or not it is all evidence right now is it's the oldest, but whether it is the oldest or not is really immaterial. What is material is it's the only language that can convey God's testimony perfectly, and that any time we translate out of Hebrew, we have to realize that we're losing a lot in the translation because of the timeless nature of the language, because of the relational stems, because of the volitional moods, and the fullness of the meaning of the words, and that so many words have a dark and light side that shows you the consequence of the choice. It is just such a wonderful language. It's so perfect.
You know, when you look at Yahusha, can you tell me how they get Yeshua out of Yahusha? I mean, how does that work?
There are two. Yahusha is written Yahusha 220 times in the Torah and prophets. It is,
and that's Yod Hey.
It's Yod Hey Wa, so Ya-O, and then Sha, which is a contraction of Yasha.
Right.
And
Yahusha.
It's written, it has the SH, and then the Ain is the last letter. That's how it's written in the Masoretic 220 times. It's twice that it's written Yahushua, which would be Yahweh cries out.
Right.
So there are two times that you have a Shua, which is Yahweh cries out. And there are times when Yahweh cries out. It's not that it's inaccurate, but Yahusha, being written Yahweh saves it's two times versus 220 times.
So right. What's after the Shen, you say?
So Yahweh. It's the first three letters of Yahweh's name are in Yahusha's name. And then after that, you have a shin, which is the SH sound, and then the
that's
ain.
Right.
There are, you know, there's the alf and the ain are the two letters that are typically represented with apostrophes, and they typically convey the A sound in English. So there's the it's the SH and then the ain. So it's sha. You know, it's impossible to get anything other than Shah from S-H-Ain. So Shen-Ain is Shah. So it's Ya-O, Yod-Hei-Wa. So Ya-O, and then the last two letters are S-H-Ain.
I just don't hear, I don't get the Yeshua. I don't see it. I mean, that would have to be a Yod and then a Shen. I mean, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, and there are two places.
Where do you get that?
There's two places where you'll see it as Yahushua, and it's Yahweh cries out, but there's only two. Now, the only place that's some question, now we've had some really good, thoughtful members of the covenant family who have software they claim presents the spelling of the Dead Sea Scrolls, where those resources show that there are more Shuas than are found in the Masoretic texts. That the 220 to 2 is that there are, and I don't know what the number is, but it's more evenly balanced than 220 to 2 based on the software that they're using for the examination of the Masoretic versus the Dead Sea Scrolls.
Well, but even then, it would be Yahshua. It wouldn't be Yeshua.
Yeah, but I will tell you that, you know, what I use is the Dead Sea Scrolls Bibles, which I like because what it does is it puts in italics those things which are...
That are different from the Masoretic.
That are different. And they always put in different spellings. I mean, if it's not only just a different word, but a different spelling of the word, and they'll highlight to say the same name but spelled differently, you know. And I looked up one day when I received that letter from a very, very thoughtful person. So it wasn't a question. This person is not trying to be argumentative or anything else. But it was using a tool and came to that conclusion. So I went through my Dead Sea Scrolls Bible looking up, and I probably looked up 50 or 60 of the 220.
You saw Shah.
And every time they indicated that there was no difference in spelling. Now, my Dead Sea Scroll Bible is written in English, but it references every place that there's a discrepancy in spelling or in a word, and there was no indication of any one of them where there was a discrepancy in spelling. So, now, I think that the less we speak of, the less we think of Yahusha, the better.
Yeah, that's fine.
But
that's
the primary focus.
Right.
You just deal with the Yahushua and Yeshua people, and they are relentless, and I just don't see how you get out of a yod and a hey, a yesh.
And the only thing you want to look at is he came in his father's name, and the Yao, the first three letters, represent the father's name. And the father's name is YHW in so many names. And so that's the part we ought to focus on. And then whether or not it's Yahweh calling out to us or Yahweh saving us, since Yahweh tells us that his role is to save us more often than he tells us that his role is to cry out to us, let's just look at it. This is Yahweh in the process of saving us.
Yeah, was there even...
We can disagree on the ending and have different opinions, but the Yah part is kind of set in stone.
That is
there's no room for wiggle there.
None. And it's not just the Yah part. It's the O after Yah. It's just say, yeah, absolutely. It's always that way. Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's just like almost all of these names, Yashaya. Yashaya is written more times as Yashayahu, or Yashayahu is probably how it's actually pronounced at the time, than it's written more times with the W at the end than it is without the W at the end.
And Zachariah is the same way.
Zachariah is the same way. Most of the names that end in Yah have the Wah included in the name more time than it's not included. Yep.
Now that I believe. I just don't get the Yeshua thing. I just don't get it. I don't understand where they're getting it. I thought there's something I'm missing there. Maybe it's just, you know, we're so used to doing what the religious rabbis do, which is lose all things Yah. That's all it is.
Yeah, I think there is an affinity with the rabbis there. And so there's a comfort level with the Hebrew roots. With Yeshua.
Well, this is a messianic in this case. But,
yeah. but very similar. The Messianics come out of a rabbinic tradition. And so, Yeshua is comes out of the rabbinic tradition, and it's impossible that the that Yahweh's name is pronounced Yeh. It is definitely not Yeh.
Mount Moriah, or whatever. Yeah,
yeah,
I got you.
Yeh, Eh. It's just not. It is a zero possibility, because we have literally thousands of words that tell us how to pronounce the hey, and the hey is ah. So it's definitely Yah, and it definitely ends in Yah. And so with Yahweh's name, there's only one sound that's open for question as to whether or not
the
wah is a U or a O. And
I say it's an O.
Yeah, and the most common words that would be the hardest for, because they've been passed on to us, being pronounced to so many people so often, that would be the hardest to be wrong are Torah and Shalom and Goyim in the language. And then there are so
Torah.
Many names that are just like, yeah, Torah, yeah. And there are so many names that are...
Yoel.
Yoel. Yob.
Joseph.
Joseph, yeah, exactly. There's so many of those names that every lexicon knows that it's a contracted form of Yahweh's name. And there's not a single one of those names that's YU. There's not...
And you
got
to love
it's not Yubel.
Because how do you throw the V in there? I mean, you've got a tongue-tied language right there, you know.
Yes.
I mean,
he was the tribe of Benjamin. Yeah, no. And the Bethel would be what? I can't even. Baal.
It gets tough out there when you got to rewrite the whole.
It gets tough out there. So.
I would say that the
likelihood of Yah and the Ah ending is 99.9% likely, and that the O in the middle as opposed to Yahuah or Yahoah, I'd say that the O is based upon the most common words, particularly Torah was the one that just grabbed me and said stupid. But Shalom, of course, and because that's the greeting of every Yahudim for centuries is Shalom, and one of their favorite things is distinguishing Goyim, and there's no question that it's an O there, and then you look at Elohim, and Elohim is from
Elohim. You sure it's not Goyim? You sure it's not Goyim?
Yeah, I'm sure it's not Goyim.
You sure it's not a mud mikra? It could
I'm sure it's not Tura.
And it could be a Yubel.
Tura. Yeah.
On the Yubel year, I was reading the Tura.
That's right.
The
Tura,
mud
Mikra.
Yeah.
Likelihood that it's Yahuwah is somewhere in the 90 percentile. Yeah, somewhere in the 90 percentile. But, it's the kind of thing, though, that if somebody wants to argue the U sound, I say okay.
I would too.
Not where I came down, but that's
they
okay.
Don't know it because they don't know it, and I'll tell you something else. It's not 99%. It's 100%. I'm going to tell you why that is. It's because it's in Yahweh's nature to share His name. He made no attempt to hide it. He made every attempt to share it, and He wasn't going to mislead us with a trick.
Yeah. And when you actually look at the Yobs and Yoels and the like, there is no, that's a slam dunk. It's God saying, by the way, I'm really cool with my name. I have no problem with you calling me Yah. You can call me you can contract it to be a more comfortable familial term. You are not going to bother me if you call me Yah. Because I'm going to use that the shortened form and a gazillion different names. I want you to be comfortable. I want you to know what my name is, Yahweh. But you can use the shortened form. I refer to him as Yah all the time. So I think it's pretty clear. It's like the date setting. I don't want to be argumentative. But it certainly looks clear to me. All right, fellas. Happy Shabbat. We'll.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I mean, you're finished with us, huh? Just
I am finished with you. The second is Shabuah's on the second, right?
guys, that's right. Yes.
Yeah, I think Shabuah's on the second. Pardon? Yeah, I'm going to celebrate it on the second at sundown. The second is Monday.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm going to celebrate
that sounds right.
Monday at sundown. I'm going to get my empowerment fix.
Okay. Yeah. Well, yeah. That's always a good one to have. It's party time, man.
Yeah, I like the empowerment fix. I like the enrichment fix too. I'm pretty cool of it. It's a pretty good deal, really, the covenant. It's a pretty good deal.
Yeah.
Dad's pretty generous. Never had to write Dad say, hey, you know, Dad, no mun, no fun, your son. You know, never felt that I was being cheated in this relationship.
Yeah.
I wonder what he's getting out of the deal, but.
You know, no, I actually, for a long time, yeah, I would be where you are. I get it. We're entertaining. We're fun. Flawed as we are, we're entertaining. We're fun. He enjoys us. Just like my children are entertaining and fun, I enjoy them. Yeah, I love every minute with them. Are they perfect? Heck no. But, boy, are they fun. Richest part of living. You know, I get it. I don't think he has any problem saying, you know, acknowledging that he gets something out of it. You know, I think he...
why else would he do it?
Yeah, why else would he do it? Yeah, yeah. All right, guys. Yeah, I'm going to kick you out.
I'm going to go get some food.
All right. Enjoyed it, as always.
Yes.
Well, you have a good night.
You too.
Thanks.
Talk to you next week.
All right. See you next week.